Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, Ramblers.
Hello.
Here we are again. Football Ramble. Come on in. Sit down. I'm joined by Pete.
Hello.
There he is. Luke.
All right.
And James or Jim.
Hello there.
Yeah, give you the option for him. gentlemen, Jimmy Bullard is back.
Woo!
Delightful to see him.
Good to see him back, yeah.
It's big nan face.
Yeah, he's a face like a nan, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I never heard it described like that, but it's right. It's good. Yeah,
it's huge as well.
We have to dedicate the opening question to him. What is your favourite Jimmy Bullard moment since the man was born?
me first, or...?
Go on.
All right. Well, I just thought, you know, might as well save you lot best to last and all that.
That's not the reason, is it?
I wasn't aware of Jimmy Bullard until about 5 or 6 years ago, so it's difficult to say if this is one of the best moments of his entire life.
Okay.
Probably best to ask him, to be
yeah,
fair.
Yeah, exactly. You could have got him on. Mine is definitely when he was seen, it's on YouTube, when he was completely Billy Bollocks in that big bin with just a pair of pants on his head.
Big laundry bin, isn't
it? Yeah, being thrown across the changing room at Wigan. But I don't know who's pushing him, but someone's filming it as well. And he gets thrown into the wall really hard. The manager would be thinking, God, don't get an injury. Do you know what I mean? He's injury prone, isn't he? So that's definitely my favourite.
Maybe that's what started it.
He's naked apart from a jockstrap on his head. You just can't imagine anyone else doing that.
That's a wonderful start to proceedings. Yeah. James?
For me, it's when he got called up to England a little while ago. I don't know what he was doing, but do you remember there was a point where it cut to him on the bench with just, I forget who it was, but the two players around him just cracking up, and he was just sort of fluidly gesticulating like he was in the middle of some brilliant Jimmy Bullard story, just cracking everybody up, and that just warmed my heart.
Yeah. Nice to see.
I think it warmed all of our hearts.
Yeah.
And more. Pete?
There was a match against Everton when Duncan Ferguson punched someone.
Oh yeah!
and there's a shot of Jimmy Bullard sort of when the referee's about to, I think, send Duncan Ferguson off. I think he's got sent off in the end. But you would up. And Bullard's looking up at tall Duncan Ferguson with a sort of mixture of fear and complete amusement in his eyes. he's in trouble.
Does he not look at him and go, "You're right"?
That sort of thing. But then later on in the same match, there's a goal mouth scramble, and I don't even think the referee's blown the whistle yet.
Oh yeah!
But he runs up to the Malay and just leaps over the top of them.
It's like a pylon. He's the last one there, but they just finish as he turns up.
Did he do something once when the lights went out at Wigan and he ran the length of the pitch?
No one scored.
Yeah, I can't remember much about that, so that's not going to be mine. That's why I didn't choose it.
Well, I wasn't going to choose a footballing example, but I suppose I should do, because he is a footballer. I loved it when he came. It was shortly again after he'd come back from yet another injury, and he was playing for Fulham, and he came back, and it was Fulham v Aston Villa, and he came on, and he came on and set up the first one, and then smashed in a free kick with about 5 minutes left, and got man of the match.
I remember that.
Absolutely superb. But I did like the other time when they were playing Arsenal, he was playing for Fulham, and Aboué went down injured. I don't know if you remember this. I think it was Aboué, and he was rolling round play acting, and Bullard ran like half the length of the pitch and just started rubbing his legs.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, yeah. And trying to help him up, yeah, I remember that.
A man who genuinely enjoys playing football.
He does, that's the great thing.
The
interviewer said to him something along the lines of, "Oh, so Jimmy, you're back," and he went, "Yeah, mate, I enjoyed
that." It's been hell. It's been my worst nightmare.
Can I put forward the notion that, that Jimmy Bullard and David Beckham sound very alike?
Yeah.
And Jimmy Bullard, David Beckham, and Andy Johnson all could be brothers, with David Beckham being clearly the best looking.
Yeah, one. Yeah, agreed. Andy
never
Johnson
been
is
runt.
Like a sort of runt of the Beckham
like, to call to call a James or Jim Campbell phrase, like Jimmy Bullard is actually quite difficult to look at. he's quite hard to look at. You're sort of thinking you can't. It takes you a fraction of a second longer to work out what part of his face is what.
Yeah,
I think
and
it's
whether
hair.
It's meant to be there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
His hair's sort of like it used to be very very curly, and now
it's
he's
not
sort
far
of
off from Lukey Moore.
His new hair's a little bit more Lukey Moore, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think I preferred it when it was
devastated. Is probably the devastated. But in all seriousness, it's great to see him back.
Because no, it is.
Can you remember when? I mean, he's been out for a long, long time, obviously. But yeah. when he did this knee for the second time, because obviously he was out a long time at Fulham. The second time he did it, I can remember Dr. Richard Stedman, you know, the famous US knee specialist.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That everyone goes to.
Del Piero loves him.
I'm not sure if you remember, but he actually said, oh, when I saw Jimmy Bullard's knee for the second time, it looked like a bomb had exploded in it. It was that
yeah,
bad.
But when I saw his face, I understood that
yeah.
it's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, you got knees again.
Yeah.
Knees,
yeah.
Too many knees.
Those pesky knees.
Knee padding football. What's the way for?
Knees, do we need them?
What's the only animal?
Emphatically, yes.
What's the only animal that's got four knees?
Cow.
Horse.
Giraffe.
No.
Is it?
Hmm?
Cow?
So, what horses
no,
haven't got
it's not cow.
Knees?
Yeah.
Is this what you're claiming?
The only animal
yeah.
with four knees?
Mammal.
Oh, come on, you're changing now. A cow's a mammal. A cow's yeah. a mammal.
Oh, well, the
horse is a mammal.
Oh, my friend who does a quiz has got it wrong then.
You should have thought about this. Don't yeah. try and pass
you
the buck.
Should have thought about it for longer than 2 seconds.
Yeah, where's your friend now, eh?
Speaking of pub quizzes, you told a cracking one a couple of weeks ago, Luke, about Liverpool.
Yeah.
Shall I do it? And then
yeah, you do it. You go
then
for it,
we'll tell the answer
at the end of the podcast.
Which player has scored more goals against Liverpool at Anfield than any other player?
Shay Given.
No, not correct.
Okay,
we'll wait.
Yeah, we'll wait till the end. It's a good one.
I heard a really interesting stat a little while ago. Apparently, Emil Heskey is yet to get a shot on target this season.
Has he even played?
Yeah, he's played 9 games.
Right, has he? Not starts, not starts.
Well, yeah, but even he's been involved.
He should have had a shot.
He should have had a shot on target.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, back to Hull and Bullard. The Phil Brown will be loving that.
Who's got the points?
Yeah. Oh, I do beg your pardon.
Yeah.
Go on, Lukey.
Yes! Jimbo! Face! I can't tell you how happy that makes me. I'm only having a pop at Jimbo because he's standing next to me. Both of you can have one of them as well.
Oi.
He's small then.
I'll take the points back.
Sorry. Yeah.
I'll take my points and go home if you're not careful. Bullard is the epitome of a talisman, isn't he? Really?
Yeah, he is.
Hull will be loving it that he's back.
It just makes things happen.
It makes things happen, yeah.
And I know we all love to hate Phil Brown and give him a little bit of stick, and fair enough. But
I think he's a nice guy. I've met him.
It was good to see Bullard run over to the coaching staff with the winner as well, you know.
I'll tell you what,
it's got to be an absolute nightmare for Bullard, though, isn't it? Moving to a club and then just having such a horrendous injury. There must be a sort of sense of guilt as well. You feel real responsibility to a team like that.
No, absolutely. I'll tell you what, boys.
There was question marks.
Get him on that plane.
You reckon?
Get him on there.
Tell you what, we can get games under his belt.
Get him on.
I'll take him over Gerrard. What are you laughing at?
Well,
no, I'm only joking. But he is a real talisman. Everything goes through him. It's like Lee Dixon was saying on Match of the Day 2 on Sunday. Like, you know, he lends a ball out and gets it back. Everything goes through him.
Yeah.
And
can you imagine if he had, like, you know, alongside someone like Gareth Barry or something?
In the middle of the park.
Brilliant.
He's not going to play for England.
Oh, come on, let me dream.
No, he's not going to play for England.
Let me dream.
I'd like to see him in the squad if you could get, like, a separate squad member just for banter purposes.
Yeah.
And he'd definitely get it.
Him and we play Brazil in the final, and it's him against Ronaldo. Fat Ronaldo.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
I hope Fat Ronaldo gets a call up. But
El Phenomenon.
That's right. We'll come on to England and such in a bit. But yeah, very good 3 points. Hull.
Can we talk about another talismanic character or a player who's developing into a talismanic character? Diamante for West Ham.
Oh, big time.
I'm not sure why he's not starting yet. I don't think he's fully fit. But
I think he's adjusting to the league.
Compared to Italy.
He looks good.
But he looks brilliant, doesn't he?
He does.
He was all over the place for West Ham against Everton, but he's normally a sort of deep line striker, isn't he?
But again, I think Zola's under a bit of pressure.
Well, he is.
You did say, Pete.
He's really, really bad luck with Dean Ashton, who's had to retire this week.
Oh,
26 years old.
25.
Are you sure?
25, yeah. Definitely 25. Sickening, absolutely
Dean
sickening.
Dean Ashton looks as though he's going to have to retire. Is he definitely
done? He's announced his retirement.
He's retired.
The weird thing is
that's such a shame.
West Ham might try and get some compensation from the FA.
Yeah.
But the FA sort of changed to a different company to provide their insurance.
Oh, right.
after the Michael Owen injury, and then Newcastle sued England.
It's always Newcastle, isn't it?
but this will be dealt with the original company, so they might actually get West Ham might actually get some compensation.
Well, that's a small consolation for them.
And they say that Ashton might sue Sean Wright Phillips, who caused the injury in the first
bloody
place.
Hell.
Sean Wright Phillips was probably trying to control a ball and snap Dean Ashton in half.
Yeah. Dean Ashton wasn't even on the pitch.
Yeah. I swear I've seen the ball bleeding after Sean Wright Phillips trying to control it.
I've seen Pelé cry. Yeah, that is awful.
Every time Sean Wright Phillips tries to control the football, God kills an angel.
Mm. even if he's doing it in his dreams.
Yeah, exactly.
Glenn Hoddle can't be happy watching him controlling it, trying to whip it in.
Yeah. Every miscontrol by Sean Wright Phillips makes baby Jesus cry.
Dear, oh dear. Chelsea versus Manchester United. I thought that Manchester United should have won that game.
I'd probably agree with you.
I thought they looked good. I thought they looked defensively strong, to be honest.
Yeah.
I thought the centre pairing of Evans and Brown.
Evans has got the old kung fu kick in his locker. So
well, I was going to come on to that.
Drogba got booked for that. What I will say for the
that
record
was
is
funny.
I don't think Drogba was injured. I think he was alright, but he sort of hammed up, and he's been a bit of a victim of sort of the boy who cried wolf there.
Yeah.
But he didn't do anything to get a booking. I mean, he got kicked in the head. The chest, sorry.
What did you text me, Jamie? I texted you saying Johnny Evans just fly kicked Drogba and got away with it.
Yeah.
Do you remember what you replied?
No.
You quoted God.
Did you?
Did I really?
He said, like, what goes around comes around, God.
That's,
that's right, yeah.
Why was Vidic on the bench?
Well, Ferguson said before that Vidic, I think there was...
Always get sent off in massive games.
Well, I think he was. He mentioned something about Vidic's fitness.
It's a mind injury.
Yeah, I think
he's lost his mind.
Well, I think he said we're picking the players who are fit. I think he's covering that up.
He was laughing. He's a shot of Vidic warming up when that happened to Drogba, and Vidic was laughing.
Yeah, that's right.
Like he was almost saying, in my home country, we do this all the time.
It's a sport in itself.
I would have got sent off for that.
I do think that United were on the end of some particularly harsh decisions, I have to say. But we haven't said that. Evans got away with that massive...
Well, it was a straight red.
That could have been a straight red.
He even got him on the way down. Bruce Lee would have been proud of that.
The free kick that led to the goal, for me, was definitely not a free kick. Fletcher's a wonderful player as well.
He's great, yeah.
He really makes them so much more solid, you know. Yeah. And in a way, it's because Hargreaves has been out for so long that Fletcher's really come into his own, hasn't he?
I mean, when Hargreaves does get back, they'll have real steel when they play together.
Do you think he will come back, though? There's a question mark over whether he will or not.
Oh, please.
I really hope so, for his sake.
I'm a big fan of Hargreaves. I'd start him for England if he was fit.
If he can get some football under his belt. But the problem is, Marcus, if he can't get back until February time, he's not going to get enough football.
Well, as Pete said, he'd probably be fresher than ever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, that's what Ericsson said, didn't he, that time? The reason Hargreaves had such a good tournament is because he was the only one fit.
Well, he was playing in Germany at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Slightly shorter season. Right. Blackburn beat Portsmouth, and Sam Allardyce seemed particularly pleased with his Tinkerman wonderfulness.
Well, like lumping two strikers on when they're losing.
Yeah.
That's a Rigo Sacchi-esque, that is. if he was that good a manager, he wouldn't play five at the back at home to the bottom of the league. And he was milking it. That celebration I didn't like. I didn't like that celebration he sort of did.
He's a magnanimous man.
And he was saying, yeah, well, maybe I'll earn me money this week. You know, it's like, fuck off.
doesn't really speak like that, but I like it. I
can't do accents.
No, we know this. I mean, he doesn't do this so much at Blackburn, it seems, but whenever you know, Bolton won a big game, or even if it was a game against someone that they generally expect to lose to, he'd go, well, you know, we probably don't get the credit we deserve, you know, it's little Bolton. Yeah. And he would always use the phrase, little
Sam.
Bolton.
Well, Brown does that a little bit. He sort of goes, well, you know, I mean, I've taken them to higher than they've ever been, and I'm the most successful manager. I'm just, shut up!
Yeah, he's always going with it.
You're at the bottom of the table, you...
He didn't even talk to the BBC, did he? He got Brian Horton too, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Why? He's too busy saving women trying to commit suicide, obviously. Which didn't happen. It clearly didn't happen. That definitely didn't happen. I'm saying that now. I don't care if it gets libel or whatever. All the players said it didn't happen, and the Samaritans, whoever it was, or the people who look after the bridge, didn't happen either.
The troll said it didn't happen.
Hang on, the Samaritans look after a bridge. Do they do that?
Samaritans or the people who look after the bridge. I can't remember which one, but one of those. Between them, they got it covered.
Yeah, all of them, James. Yeah.
What, so the players said that it didn't happen?
Yeah, they said he was with us the whole time. And he got asked about it this week, and he sort of avoided the question.
Is he sort of like got sort of some crazy sort of Superman sight, second sight sort of thing, where he sees women in peril?
Yeah.
He just wants the limelight, doesn't he? Yeah. He just loves it.
Newcastle United have sensibly changed their stadium name.
Email address.
It was, of course, St James's Park. It's now... And let me get this right.
Sportsdirect.com at St James's
at
Park.
St James's
Doesn't
Park.
Make sense as an email address. Or no. Like a web address.
Or anything.
Or a stadium name.
Yeah.
Least of all, a stadium name.
It's just like he's trying to annoy the Newcastle fans into just like supporting company. Sunderland.
So, what he said is, the naming rights for the stadium are up for grabs, presumably to raise a bit more money, and he's just given it to his own company for nothing.
Yeah. No, maybe he said the naming rights are up for grabs. Look, I mean, I'll do it for you. I'll give you an example.
For example.
From what we know of his business acumen, he probably has actually sort of paid for the rights, but just out of his own his own money.
I've skipped this
thinking he's
now.
Got a great deal.
Yeah. Pete, what do you think about it?
Well, the sign was already there, wasn't it? The big spots, the big garish.
It was one stand was named after it, wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't. It was just there, and it looked awful, and everyone was just like, oh, really?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I just... him sort of saying, well, we'll get $6 million for it each year, it'll be ploughed back in the team. Joey Barton was 5.5. You know what I mean? We need... Albert Luque, Cisco, they were all more expensive than $6 million bloody
quid. I know what he's thinking. He's thinking, do you know something? I've looked at it and we're top of the league. We've got to do something to get the headlines. What's happening? People are thinking we're actually competent. We've got to do something ridiculous.
But it's just like...
His contract, which is drawn up with himself.
Yeah.
Like, if you build a new stadium, the Emirates, right? Yeah. They're well within their rights to... And if the Emirates want to put some money in, it's fine. Yeah. But if you... If you just rename a stadium that's already there, that's been there for 100 years, it's going to get people's back up, isn't it?
Isn't it just for the rest of the season, though? Are they trying to show what a brilliant thing it will be to name
I think Sports Direct is for the rest of this season and then for next season.
So am I not? I got the wrong end of the stick here. I don't know too much about it, but is it not a way to get the £6 million from his Sports Direct business into the club?
No. Just that if it gets sponsored, they'll be asking for $6 million.
Mike, I'm trying to give you something. I'm trying to help you out.
You got to help us help you.
Yeah, exactly.
Pete, can we call you Pete Donaldson at the Football Ramble for the rest of the show?
Yeah. No, it would be Pete.com at the Football Ramble. Do get it right, James.
In the Championship also, there was the Welsh Derby.
Paulo Sousa's...
They're doing well. I'll tell you what, they're defending well, Swansea. I know they let a couple
3-2 against Cardiff, we should say.
Let's not forget he's looking like Wayne Coyne from the Flaming Lips as well.
He is.
Good luck, that.
Yeah. It went to 2-2, didn't it? Very, very sort of tight, intense game. It's interesting.
Prattley scored a couple, didn't he? That fella Prattley. Don't know anything about him other than that.
I wanted to see Lee Trundle play because I like his skills.
Yeah, he's mad. But he was like proper deluded flash bloke over the park skills.
The Scottish Premier League, ladies and gentlemen, is much tighter than it usually is at this stage. Celtic are top, fine. Rangers are second, usual. Hibs are third. But, I mean, there's only 10 points that separates first to sixth. Usually second to third is about 10
points. The Dons are my Scottish team as well.
And if Hibs had have beaten Hearts at the weekend, they would have, albeit for 24 hours or whatever it was, would have been top.
Wouldn't it be amazing to see someone actually break that monopoly? I know Rangers are in a lot of trouble at the moment. It could just take Celtic to have a bit of a funny one as well. Because Hibs have been in really, really good form.
They have.
Well, Celtic have obviously had a new manager. Rangers are bang in trouble financially because the banks are calling their debts in, their loans in. Sort of similar, but not as bad as the Pompey situation. Like you say, Hibs drew 0-0 with Hearts, didn't they, in the Edinburgh Derby? But if they'd won, they'd have gone top.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, we're not talking about one or two games in here. We're talking about 10 or 11 games in. So it's definitely interesting.
No, I think it's great. I mean, I can't stand all this talk of Rangers and Celtic moving south.
No, it's stupid. I think, you know, if they really want to sort of consolidate the position, if things are a bit shaky at the moment, what would be probably quite a popular idea up north, rather than them moving down south, would be if Rangers and Celtic were to merge...
I think that's a good idea. I think that'll be met with universal approval. I'm not endorsing them moving to the Premier League, but if you think about it, I do genuinely believe, and you can shoot me down in flames for saying this, but I genuinely believe that Celtic definitely would be absolutely massive in the Premier League. If they consolidated their position for a couple of years and got the money, you imagine the money they get in Scotland is infinitesimal compared to the Premier League. They'd be one of the biggest clubs in the world, in my opinion.
No, they would be, absolutely would be. But I just don't like the idea of Celtic and Rangers sort of running off to the English League.
Oh, that's a different issue. Yeah. I'll probably agree with that.
They're Scottish teams. They should be in Scotland, you know.
It's an interesting debate that will probably never go away.
Well, but, like yeah, I said
just,
last
it's
week...
It's just not right, is it?
About the Swansea and Cardiff thing, what if they get in the Premiership?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just a bit weird.
That is an interesting point, actually.
But is that to do... Now, is the Swansea and Cardiff thing to do with them being professional clubs and the Welsh League not being professional?
Well, no, but the problem is, the reason that's slightly different is because Swansea...
Maybe there is one or two teams in the Welsh League that are professional.
Well, it's not. Regardless of that, it's not. It's nowhere near. I mean, I know Scotland gets derided for its standard of football, but it's much, much better than the Welsh Football League, obviously.
Yeah.
And also, Swansea and Cardiff have been playing in the English leagues for a long, long time.
Well, this is it. Yeah.
I think you know, what's more likely to happen, and heaven forbid, but I think it's possible, is that a European league will eventually happen, and Rangers and Celtic, or Rangers or Celtic, may go into that.
Well, they could do, yeah. But I mean, can you see Portsmouth fans going from Portsmouth to Glasgow? Well,
Portsmouth won't be in it.
No, if they're in the Premier League.
Yeah, well, if they're going to go up to Newcastle... You know,
no, that's an extra three
mate,
or four
look
hours.
At countries that are much bigger than England. Yeah. It's not a,
then damn them to Hades.
Yeah. Sorry, we haven't talked about English football here, mate.
Sorry. The England squad against Brazil has been announced, and Huddleston and Darren Bent are in.
D-Bent. Mm.
D-Beck has pulled out, though, but... That's to the delight of LA Galaxy, of course, because they're doing well.
He's got a match of players, and he's got a match of players.
It's a little bit, yeah, because they're in the final, aren't they? Yeah. It's a little bit ironic that D-Bent's been called up shortly after one of the worst performances he's had, when he's been banging them in.
I don't think he was particularly bad against Spurs. Okay,
he did do a dive, I thought.
It's a massive dive for that pen, though. It was on his way down, but obviously he should have got a decision before that.
I don't think his performance was particularly
bad. No, listen, let me clarify that. I think he absolutely deserved his place. I'm just saying that he has played better in the past. It's a little bit ironic that he's been called up now when he's been ignored in the past, that's all.
Yeah, well, it's encouraging that obviously players are getting picked on form. I mean, we knew this with Capello anyway, it's just so many England managers in the past haven't done the simple things, which he does so well.
Yeah.
It's encouraging.
Joe Hart's in there?
Yeah. I mean, he's not going to get a run out. I suppose he might do the friendly.
Maybe.
But, something that, you know, Luke and I were talking about earlier, that, you know, a year ago or even 6 months ago, a lot of people were saying, oh, we're so blessed in the centre-back position.
Not now.
Tell you what. And I thought this, actually, before. I know Match of the Day, Alan Hansen was, you know, ripping Jolyn Lescott and Wayne Bridge apart. But I've always been a bit suspect of Lescott.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't take him to
I'll go further. So the only position we're actually strong enough in my opinion, for the World Cup, if things stay as they are, I'm not saying they will, is midfield. I don't think I think we're pretty light up front. I think it's looking potentially disgracefully light at the back. And I think there's question marks over our goalkeepers as well.
Yeah, I think the goalkeeper's definitely...
depressed now.
Yeah, it's a bit depressing, I know.
After a really, really good qualifying campaign, we've got this place where Rio Ferdinand's not playing well, we don't have a goalkeeper to speak of, and you know, we've only got Wayne Rooney up front.
Well then, mate, we'll win it.
The one good thing, though, is that, and I mean, it's just a question of can it keep his fitness. Jonathan Woodgate is back.
Yeah.
Now, I think we're all good. Probably he's good enough.
Well, Woodgate. Well, listen. To be fair, and I know it's we said this a few weeks ago. Woodgate has been fit. I mean, he played 34 games last season.
Yeah. Right.
So he's played football. Mm. He is fit enough. He needs to. I know it's partly his own fault, but he needs to shut. Or the press need to stop giving him the old injured Woodgate line, because he's not injured that much anymore.
Yeah. You'd start Woodgate, wouldn't you?
I would. Absolutely. Of course, I would. Yeah. And the other thing is that. The injury he got recently, didn't he get like a boot in the... Oh, no, he hit his head, didn't he? And so I mean, you can't argue with that. That's just the way it goes. But for me, if he's fully fit, it's Woodgate and Terry for me.
Yeah. Well, Terry's obviously...
Because Ferdinand's having a... I don't know if Ferdinand's lost it completely.
What about Sol Campbell?
I'm not ruling them out, Jimbo. I'm refusing to rule him out. If we can find out where he is, we'll put him in. It's a geographical thing with Sol. If we know where we can pin him down from, it's not like trying to find Saddam Hussein.
Maybe he's already...
Get me Hollywood on the phone.
Yeah. Maybe he's already in South Africa.
Sol Campbell nest.
Everybody turns up and... Sorry, Jolyon. Lescott, you think we're all right?
Do you reckon he's sitting there on a beach on a sun lounger in South Africa at the moment, trying Fabio Capello's mobile? Turned off again.
Yeah.
I'll try him tomorrow.
He doesn't know the number. He's just trying every combination of numbers he can.
Yeah.
Well, he's got from now until June.
But I'll tell you what, if Woodgate's fully fit, for me, he's undoubtedly... I think he's definitely in the squad, and for me, possibly starts the game as well.
Can I say something that you might disagree with?
Go on.
I wouldn't have Wayne Bridge in the squad. I would take Kieran Gibbs, Arsenal fullback.
That is a big shout.
Gibbs is a very, very good player. A lot of people tip this as well, but I mean, will his inexperience not be a bit of a risk?
I just think
I know he slipped in the semi-final of the Champions League. I thought he was brilliant.
He's
in
a good
games.
Player.
He's a great player.
He's got pace. Wayne Bridge has not really got much pace.
I don't think Wayne Bridge is that good. No. I'm not just saying that because
Wayne Bridge would be torn apart.
Yeah,
against the nippy,
well, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, but he's obviously right back. He's obviously a right-hand side player.
Well, he's in the squad as
but
well.
But he's played at left-back, hasn't he, Warnock? He's played all over. Yeah, no, he's a really sort of versatile player.
Okay.
It's a shame Phil Jagielka got injured, obviously.
Yeah.
Because he was kind of in there. Gary Cahill for Bolton.
The problem England have got...
What do you think, Cahill?
I think he's a good player, but yeah. I think the problem we have is that we've got a little bit of a gap in the middle because... I don't mean that literally, but I mean we've got players who are... arguably sort of on the... I mean, is it too early to say Rio Ferdinand's on his way out? He can't prove his fitness. So if we assume that he's not going to get that form back, the only players we've got as backup are relatively inexperienced.
Yeah.
And so Gary Cahill, he's obviously got the makers of a great footballer. And he, you know, God knows he gets a lot of work every Saturday at Bolton. But is he got the experience? I mean, the way you've got to see it is... It's very, very difficult, if not impossible, to simulate the conditions of a World Cup against the best players in the world.
No, it is impossible.
Yeah, against the best players in the world at their peak. So you can say, okay, well, can they play in a friendly against Brazil? We probably could. Could they play in a qualifying game against Croatia, who are a good team? Yeah, they can. Can they play in a semi-final against Spain or Brazil? Yeah. My worry about England in the World Cup, and it's probably been said 100 times before, is that... even under Capello, against the top sides, we've been found out.
Yeah,
yeah, we've been found out against Spain.
A lesson against Spain.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Against Spain, it was it wasn't the first 11. You were playing with Agbon, Lahore, Heskey up front, you know, Barry and Carrick in the middle.
But you still expect them to... Well, that could happen in the World Cup, I guess, isn't it?
So Marcus,
it would take a lot of injuries for that.
If Wayne Rooney is injured or suspended for a knockout game in the World Cup, who do you play up front?
Jimmy Bullard.
Correct. you see what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
An awful lot for England to get to that level.
Well, you see, and now I think, though...
those players.
Capello's one of these managers, he picks four strikers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think five.
We ain't got five.
I'd have Owen. I would have Owen.
Well, he sort of put a lid on Owen almost.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to go, is he?
Well, you're talking about experience. I mean, that's certainly something Owen's got.
I mean, Owen could well perform the role he's performing at Man United, which is coming off the bench and just nicking a goal.
And perhaps just on that reputation, people sort of going, oh, God, look who they've got on the bench.
I understand what you guys are saying. I've previously been pretty critical of Owen. I do see the worth in taking him for the experience and taking him... Because he can probably change a game when he comes off the bench. Yeah. I don't know...
All right. What about this, then? You take out one of the midfielders, Ryan Phillips. You stick it Owen.
Yeah, well, see, that's what I would do. I do think you should take five strikers because it's such a
important
everyone
else
position.
I don't see Tom Huddleston going to the World Cup. I don't think he's mobile enough. But I think he'll get some experience, which is great for him.
Well, Capello said he's got about 17 players who are definites, and I think the other six are up for grabs. But he did like an Owen. He says, you know, Owen is like what Antonio Cassano is to Lippi in terms of picking him or not. But
it's not, though, is it? I don't see that.
because Capello's, he looks at Owen and he thinks, yeah, he's a good player, but he's not picking him.
Yeah, but Owen's not firing his team to the top of the league, is he? Cassano's firing Sampdoria to the top of the league.
Well, OK, that's a good point. But Sampdoria president Riccardo Garoni has revealed that... an ugly story, as he puts it, has kept Lippi from calling up Cassano to the Italian side. Because, as you say, Cassano has been massive in Sampdoria's rise up the table. And a lot of the media and a lot of people are saying, why the hell is he not picking this guy?
There's a reason behind the scenes, is what
you're saying. Well, Garoni said to one of the radio stations out in Italy, he says, Cassano has an explanation that I know and that I have no intention of speaking about.
Wicked whispers. Yeah. Oh.
Ask the 3 a.m. girls.
He said, I've never spoken with Lippi and I've never allowed myself to speak about Cassano. Maybe one day this story will come out. And it will be very, very ugly.
Can't imagine Cassano doing anything like that, can you?
which Italian footballer flew a helicopter into an orphanage?
Well,
love it.
Who knows?
And obviously, by the way, for the record, I know that Sampdoria aren't top of the league now, but they have been in the past. And it's been largely down to Cassano.
And for the record, Cassano did not fly a helicopter. smash a
helicopter. To our knowledge.
Into an orphanage.
But you see what I mean, though? The reason the analogy falls down, in my opinion, is because Owen isn't playing much, whereas Cassano is the fulcrum of
the entire side. Well, I think he's just meaning, it's just that one in the back of his head, oh, should I pick him, should I not?
Maybe you will. Maybe Capello will throw a massive curveball and he'll put Owen in.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, meanwhile, in the FA headquarters, you're sticking with England, they've had a handbag turn up at the doorstep, which was formerly belonged to Mrs. Jack Warner. Yeah.
You'd want that one checked out before you went anywhere near it, wouldn't you?
Jack Warner's never been so humiliated. Dear.
I hate him.
I hate him.
He was very much a peripheral character in my mind a few months ago. Now I don't think as a day goes by that I don't actively seek out a story regarding that hateful, unalloyed div.
He's quite the gom.
He's a prize Doyle.
Bellend.
Helmet. It's brilliant because, you know, I reckon with other like media outlets, you get like really well rounded, like intelligent criticism. Yeah. Oh, I'll tell you what, Jack Warner, maybe you should take a look at himself because this, and we're just going, helmet.
I think ours is probably more accurate.
Yeah.
More measured.
Ghastly, man.
It shows the arrogance of the man because not only is he a bit corrupt, you get corruption around FIFA, we all know that. Yeah. But, you know, in a way, it's almost like he's so arrogant because he won't even just keep his mouth shut.
Yeah, but he's really, really got this vendetta against England, the capricious little prick.
Yeah. The thing is, like Marcus said it like a couple of weeks ago, the fact is, the World Cup rotates around the continents, we all know that, and it should be given on a cyclical basis and slightly changed or awarded for people who've got the best facilities, put the best investment in, can host it properly, and all that sort of thing. It shouldn't be anything to do with taking out delegates out for dinner and giving them handbags. Yeah. To me, it's just really, really abhorrent.
Well, that's kind of what Warner's saying, though, isn't it, by throwing it back in the FA's face?
But pot calling kettle.
Yeah, God. Yeah.
A man who was found guilty of siphoning off tickets to the World Cup through his own travel agency.
For a personal profit of $1 million.
For asking for money to be signed over in his name from the Scottish FA.
Personal
FA.
Checks, yeah.
From and also, what was the other thing?
Under declaring profits of one of his companies, I forget which company now, to the tune of $17 million for tax reasons.
He had a pop at...
he hasn't paid a fine.
Roy Keane as well.
Yeah, the $1 million he took for personal profit, or his family, whoever it was, for personal profit, he was told by FIFA he had to pay back and he still hasn't bothered.
That's right. And they're Trinidad players, Trinidad and Tobago
players. They still haven't been paid their bonuses.
For the 2006 World Cup.
Yeah, he called them mercenaries, even though he's made a ridiculous amount of cash at the game for not actually doing anything. At least they actually got talent, they play football.
I was going to say, yeah.
I would... Go beat on. Him within an inch of my own life, I think. I would just hit him and hit him and hit him until my lungs collapse.
And Pete is tough.
Yeah. You know, he was just a bloody mush.
Would you let me throw you at him, Pete? La Liga was quite exciting on the weekend.
Always is, Marcus.
Barcelona-Mallorca, wonderful setup from Ibrahimovic for the
overrated.
First goal.
Overrated, cost too much money, rubbish. Goes missing in the big games.
Swedish.
Never proved himself.
Not that good. Yeah.
Why is that? Oh, hello, is that Paul Hayward from the Observer? All right, how you doing? Yeah, not bad.
Yeah. Barcelona, they beat Mallorca. And Real Madrid, they beat Atletico Madrid in the Madrid derby. That's what you predicted, Pete.
It certainly was.
And it happened.
Pete.com for today.
We'll call you Pete the Prophet.
Yeah.
It was a great game. Did you watch it?
I didn't see that game, no.
Kaká scored a great goal to get proceedings underway. They talk about early goals in that match. That was about 4 or 5 minutes in, true to form. And then... Marcelo scored a great goal from a really tight angle. It reminded me a little bit of... Do you remember that Iron Robin goal in Euro 2008?
I do, yeah.
From that really tight
angle. Couldn't believe he scored it, yeah.
It
was against Russia, wasn't it?
No, Romania.
Romania, okay, right.
Yeah, I think it was Romania. It reminded me a little bit of that.
I heard they were hanging on towards the end, though, Real.
Well, they were hanging on. They scored... Higuain scored. He robbed the defender in the second half. But then... Oh, and this is why we love football. You know, the way it can change all of a sudden. Because they were 3-0 up and cruising. And then... Sergio Ramos, I think it was, got sent off. and then Forlan scored on 79. Then Aguero scored on 81.
Super Kun. Oh. It was an amazing goal as well, wasn't it?
And they should have equalised. They had two chances. Yeah. Simão had one. Okay, it was a volley on his weaker foot, but still he might have done better. And then Kun Aguero should have scored in the last minute.
He's starting to find his form now.
Oh, he's such a
good against player. Chelsea, two good goals.
Yeah, crackers, yeah. But he didn't start. He hasn't started the season that well. He's just starting to pick up now.
That's right.
But, I mean, Atletico Madrid are an absolute joke of a club, so it's hardly surprising. Yeah.
But it was, you know, Madrid, they're right back up there. I mean, they're only a point behind Barcelona. People calling for Pellegrini's head.
Yeah.
Well, apparently, like, there's all this talk with saying that Perez wants Benitez or whatever, and that they offered Wenger the job as well.
They did offer Wenger the job before Pellegrini.
Yeah, but it's just the managers they get no time at Real Madrid.
Well, they don't see it.
The worst club for him. They're idiots to even offer him the job.
Yeah. I think Pellegrini's doing a good job. They're out, still without Ronaldo, of course.
You've got to look at it, and you've got to say, with Pellegrini, you've got to say, well, you know, Perez, you know, we all know what Florentino Perez is like, but. Yeah, what's he going to do? You're not letting him sign any of his own players. Now, okay, that may not be the culture in Spain, fine. But you've signed a whole lot of players to the tune of hundreds of millions of euros, and you're giving him less than 3 months to sort it out.
12 games in and we've won nothing. It's a disgrace.
Exactly, yeah. It's almost like that's what he's saying, isn't it? Yeah.
Is he so impatient that he forgets the logic of football?
Well, Sid Lowe did a really good piece just saying that, you know, Florentino Perez hates the season. He prefers the off-season because when it's the off-season, he can be centre of attention.
Oh, yeah, of course.
What he doesn't care about is winning or losing. All he cares about is being in the press. Yeah. That's all he gives a shit
polishing
about.
Polishing his trophies.
Well, hopefully they'll have Ronaldo back soon because apparently he's been given a helping hand through some very kind chaps in Lima in Peru. Apparently they've got the maracas out in the outside the Spanish embassy. They're sprinkling, I think, coca leaves. They're giving out good vibes. They fight the spirits. The curse that's cursed.
Because he got cursed by a wizard, didn't he, Ronaldo?
He actually has got injured.
It's interesting because Marca said that he went for his final scan to see if he could start light training again. It's just not healed. Yeah. It's just not healed. He might be out for another 3 months.
Yeah, we might have to have an operation.
It was a voodoo priest named Pepe.
Yeah.
I thought he wasn't Pepe. Does he not make enough money?
Again.
If I get him injured, maybe I could play on the wing.
Well, I mean, it sort of begs the question why they went to the Spanish embassy, but maybe there isn't a Portuguese embassy.
No, yeah, maybe not.
Yeah. I don't think they're too logical, these people. But,
they're shaking maracas to heal an injury.
Oh, no, and swords as well.
Oh, right. Well,
this is to lift the curse.
Okay.
Because swords are a good instrument for that. But I think the minimum.
I've only been using them for the cut things up until now.
Well, you've missed
out, mate. Idiot.
Yeah, well, the minimum estimated recovery time is about 3 to 4 weeks for Ronaldo.
But
it'll be good to see him back because he's had a great start.
It's incredible how they seem overly reliant on him already. They've still got players like Kaká in the team.
I know.
But they're still doing okay, aren't they? I mean, they're playing much better with him in the side, I think, as any team would. I definitely read an article recently saying that it's just not healing his ankle for some reason, and they don't know why.
Yeah.
Weird.
Well, the swords and the maracas might help.
Yeah. Well, it can't hurt.
Well, they can.
Well, the swords can.
Not from Lima. Not from Lima, they can't.
Well, they've got a good reach.
That'd be a hell of a swing, wouldn't it? Emails.
It is emails. And who'd like to go first?
I'll go first if you want.
Go on, Jamesy.
Right. And Yong Hash... I'm going to try that again. And Yong Hashim Nikar, Ramblers. I assume that means something in North Korean, because that's where they seem I was from.
North Korea?
Bloody Korea.
What?
About a month ago, you asked for folk to email if they felt they were your most obscure country listener. I take the blame for that grammar. I believe that's what I said. I think I have a chance of laying claim to that title, and I apologise for not informing you sooner. But it takes a while for news to reach Pyongyang, North Korea.
Woo! That's brilliant!
Yeah. I've been working here for about 9 months, and each time I escape to China... Are you enslaved? I download a batch of your podcasts and cheer myself up by listening to them on the long, lonely nights in the socialist paradise.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it? So, although DPRK is an isolated country and the authorities are careful about what outside influences can be bestowed on the populace, the citizens of Pyongyang are treated to a football highlight show on their one television channel each Sunday night. Found this out after my 72-year-old Korean language teacher once started rambling, so to speak, about a Zinedine Zidane's headbutt on Materazzi back in 2006. She also called Maradona a cheat, and on a visit to Kim Il-sung University, we got chatting with some students about Wayne Rooney, David Beckham and Cristiano Ronaldo. There are a few Man United and Chelsea fans among them, but I told them that Rangers are the best team in the world in an attempt to bolster the number of Pyongyang loyal Rangers supporters clubs, currently one.
Good lad, good lad.
Yeah, so...
As you know, the DPRK national team have qualified for next year's World Cup. I attended three of their qualifying matches. They're miserly at the back, but a bit shy in front of goal themselves. As part of the preparations, they're playing some club team from Brazil, owned by Reverend Moon of the Moonies fame, tomorrow. I'll let you know how they get on. All the best, Chris.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you very much.
Keep us posted.
Yes, you do that.
I'm interested to see how North Korea's preparations are going for the tournament in all seriousness, so keep us posted, Chris.
I love it. How many media outlets have not managed to get into North Korea? The ramble has penetrated.
Without even trying.
That is wonderful stuff.
I think it's just us and you too.
And we're not even charging, they are. They're charging terrific amounts.
Chris, definitely one of my favourite ramblers.
That's cracking. If you could come up with somewhere more obscure than that, then email in.
If you can top that. Don't make it up, though.
No, exactly.
Sometimes it seems like you do, mentals.
That'll ruin it, Kevin from Five, I'm looking at you. Never heard of him since.
If you can sort of, if there's a big old pin of Kim Jong, maybe
steal it.
Maybe
deface
just,
it.
Just write "Ramble Force Ho."
You'll definitely be killed.
On his forehead.
Take the hit, mate.
Yeah, take one for the team. Shall I go next?
Go on, old sport.
Afternoon, Ramble Force.
Hello.
And greetings from Sweden.
Far
away as well.
Not as far, but still.
I thought I'd bring to your attention a glaring omission in Fabio Capello's recent England squads. Here in deepest Scandinavia, an Englishman has been taking the Allsvenskan, Swedish Premier League, by storm.
Read on.
Criminally overlooked in his home country, AIK Stockholm's Kenny Pavey is a true cult hero here in Sweden. Capable of operating at either right back or his preferred right wing, he has recently played a massive part in firing AIK to an unprecedented League and Cup double.
My giddy aunt.
He's been at AIK for 3 years now and is loved by the fans, who regularly serenade him with the chant, in English — they all speak very good English in Sweden, obviously — of "There's only one Kenny Pavey."
Good.
In the penultimate game of this season, in a derby against fierce local rivals Hammarby, which AIK had to win to keep their title dreams alive, Kenny came on with 15 minutes to go and scored the winner within 90 seconds. That's Royal Rovers stuff. He celebrated in front of us by ripping his shirt off, scaling the fence separating the fans from the pitch, and cutting both his hands to shreds on the barbed wire at the top. He didn't even get booked. On top of that, he's just been voted as the dirtiest player in the league by his fellow players, and was recently reprimanded by Adidas, AIK's kit sponsors, for posing for a photo of the main Swedish tabloid newspaper, giving it the finger with both hands, wearing gloves with Adidas in huge letters. His quote accompanying the photo, which was a double play spread, was "Fair play is for losers." As AIK have now qualified for next year's Champions League, hopefully you'll soon be able to see Kenny roasting some Premier League fullbacks.
Amazing.
And finally getting the attention he deserves.
Fabulous.
Paul in Stockholm.
Kenny
well done,
Pavey.
Paul. And well done, Kenny Pavey. Cracking. Let's get him on the line. Pete, get him on. Have we got him on the line? Is he on now?
Hello. I'm a wild man.
I'm kicking people in.
That is
with
amazing.
With my fists. My hands are sore.
I wonder where he's from. I bet he's from, like, Darby.
I'll tell you what, I did a little bit of a research before the show.
You cheeky.
And he's played semi-professional in sort of in the Kent area.
Right.
But then he went to Sweden. He played for a lower league team in Sweden, and then he went to AIK.
I told you, Scandinavian football looks great fun.
It does. I'm sure a move fell through with him. I think it was for Villa in the late 90s. He's about 30, 31 now. But he sounds like an absolute star, so it'd be great to hear from him more.
That's absolutely wonderful. Pete, have you got an email?
Yes.
Far away.
Would you like to read it?
To me and said, "Read this one out, Pete." This is by a fella who simply calls himself Gaza. I presume this isn't the fella. We'd probably have heard about this before. But now then, Ramblers, he says. A few years ago when I was at university, I tried out for the football team and managed to get on the third string. We were somewhat before our time with all our foreign imports. Our team was made up of half a dozen Spanish lads, a few French, some Swedes, a couple of Scousers, and me...
Scousers aren't foreign.
And me, the token Northern Irish. Anyway, we were going through Anyway, we were going through a bad run at the start of the second season, having lost a few on the trot. We always fancied ourselves in university as a version of Wimbledon. We were absolute toilets and played the long ball game mostly, but moreover in the pranks we used to play.
Nice.
Our team song, which we played before the games in the changing room, full blast, was "Build Me Up, Buttercup."
Oh yeah.
Lovely song.
That's a student favourite, that is.
Anyway, it was my 21st birthday during one of our bad spells, and as I got changed into my kit before a game, the other lads grabbed me dressed in my kit and chucked me in the shower.
Okay.
So, he was completely soaking wet. We barely had enough kits for the team, never mind spares, so I was forced to play in my soaking kit. That game, I scored a hat-trick and we won our very first game of the season. The following week, I took another shower once kitted up, along with the other striker. I scored two, he banged in a hat-trick, we won 6-0.
Sounds a bit erotic.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
A little bit women in love, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
The third week, the whole team, including subs, took a shower once kitted up, and as we trudged onto the park, dripping wet through, the other team looked at us as if we were absolute idiots. We won
4-0. That's great.
Amazing.
This ritual happened every week. We never lost a game, got to the cup final, and before the game, we lined up around the centre circle, produced a ghetto blaster,
and died of flu.
And danced like idiots in our somewhat odd version of the Hacker to Build Me Up Buttercup, all the while completely soaking wet. The following year, the team broke up as some of the lads left, and the others moved up to better sides. But I can always remember how funny we looked, soaking wet before the games even started. Mincing around to a crap 60s tune. Great days, I'm sure you will agree, chaps. Great show, keep it up, and mention the mighty Northern Ireland a bit more. Gather.
Cheers. Brilliant. That's superb stuff, mate.
Surely they would get a cold a lot.
I know.
Right. Don't question it. They're winning games.
They wouldn't get the shirt pulled.
Judge them on their results.
Yeah. I think next time we
Phil
play.
Brown, if you're listening.
Who gets the old champ man goodie bag then, Marcus?
Well, it's got to be Gaza, because it's not going to be going to North Korea.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
What is this Western video game nonsense?
All right, cool. Well done, Gaza.
Well done, Gaza.
On its way to you, pal.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's profile time. And I'm particularly excited about this profile.
I can confirm that.
Because this is... we're putting in a team... And this is one of my favourite teams in footballing history. It is the Indomitable Lions of Cameroon, the 1990 World Cup side.
Superb.
Yeah, they are.
One of my favourites as well, don't mind saying.
Absolutely fantastic. And sported one of my favourite kits of all time.
Yeah, the massive golden lion on the breast.
Yeah.
Green shirt with white trim, red shorts, yellow socks.
Much like a flag.
Green socks, yellow socks?
Yellow socks.
Yeah,
definitely
you're right. Oh, because the flag, that's the colours of the flag, absolutely. Where do we begin? Well, the 1990 World Cup side, that's what they were. They qualified for the 1990 World Cup and they surpassed Nigeria and they beat Tunisia in the final playoff round. Now, we can't stress enough that the African sides... were a complete unknown quantity at World Cup.
They only got two teams, didn't they, rather than five?
They only got two teams at this point. I mean, only a few years previous, you had, was it Zaire, who didn't know how to defend free kicks in a World
Cup? Yeah,
the
rules even, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The whistle blew and the guy ran out and just booted it away. You know, this is...
Can he have a profile at some point?
Well, I think they will. But, you know, this was... I mean, 1990, you know, it's not that long ago, but... you know, we see
it's 19 years ago, Marcus.
I know, but we
23
about,
years after the summer off.
thank you. At the moment, you know, some of the best players in the world are from Africa, but nobody knew any of these African players. And they, as I say, I can't stress enough, they were a complete unknown.
We didn't have the research tools we got now. The internet wasn't there.
Well, there's all that.
And also, the World Cup was a smaller proposition there as well. There wasn't 32 teams in it then, was there?
That's right. We had a tiny bit from them in the 1982 World Cup. They did qualify, and they played three matches, and they drew all three against the Italians, I think, who won that competition. So a very credible draw there. But again, 8 years passed, and they didn't. They went out in the first round in that tournament. So again, nobody knew anything about them. So in the first match of the whole tournament, you have Argentina, who are Argentina, who are the world champions. Have both players like Caniggia and Maradona.
They opened the tournament, didn't they?
They opened the tournament against Cameroon. So people are thinking, well, Maradona and co against this team, we don't know. Cameroon have two men sent off and beat Argentina 1-0.
Francis Omambique scored a great header. Well, what he did was he used the Argentinian defender's leg as like a leg up.
Yeah.
The ref didn't see it. He headed it in. The keeper fumbled it in the bottom corner.
And then they were away.
And it's party time.
and it really was party time. We'll put some images up of them celebrating.
Oh, they had a superb time.
It is incredible. But they scored when they were down to 10 men. Cannell was sent off on 61. Omar Beek scored on 67. And then Benjamin Massing, the big defender.
He was no stranger to a big challenge.
One of the most outrageous fouls you'll see. He took out Khadija on 89. Then in the next match, they played Romania. Mm. And they beat Romania 2-1. And people, they qualified.
Yeah, Romania also qualified, didn't they, from that group?
Romania did, because Ireland put them out on penalties. So they suddenly they've qualified. Mm. And people are thinking, flipping heck. So they got through the group stages, but if we talk about the actual squad themselves, we mentioned sort of the big player Massing at the back from Francois Omar Beek. He played at the 90 World Cup and went on to play at the 94 and 98 World Cup. Mm. I remember Jean-Claude Pagal, who had particularly good hair. A couple of them had great hair. But one area they were particularly strong in Cameroon, it can't be underestimated, was in goal. Now, their goalkeeper was Thomas Nkono, who's considered by many as the greatest African keeper ever. And here's something for you. Gianluigi Buffon called his son Thomas in honour of Thomas Nkono.
Absolutely superb. That's a big honour.
Yeah.
Big honour.
So, yeah, Thomas Nkono, he played, I think he played in Spain. He did play in Spain, Nkono. Unfortunately, though, I mean, I've got to say this just for Bantz. he was arrested by riot police once using black magic prior to an African Cup of Nations semi-final with Mali. He was dragged onto the running track after stepping onto the pitch, and there was an object found in his pocket, which was a black magic charm to try and help the Cameroon cause.
Oh, really?
So any means necessary. But
they also stick some swords about it. You know, it won't be effective.
Yeah. They also had Jack Songo, didn't they, on the bench?
They did have Jack Songo, yes. Yeah. He was, I mean, he's considered one of the great African goalkeepers as well, as was Joseph Antoine Bell. He played over 100 matches for Marseille, but Songo, he featured for Cameroon in every World Cup from 1990 to 2002.
Amazing.
Which is incredible. And he was only their first choice at the 98 World Cup. And he also played, I mean, just to prove that he was a decent keeper, he played over 150 games for Deportivo La Coruña and was a part of their 99 to 2000 La Liga winning side.
Yeah.
So real pedigree in goal there.
Yeah. No doubt.
And a number of these players were to go on to play for some European clubs. But without a shadow of a doubt, their main man, their talisman, was Roger Miller.
There's no better sight than him in full flow, I tell you. He robbed Higuita in the second round of beauty.
Well, one of my favourite players of all time, Roger Miller. Barry Davis always used to call him Roger Mia.
Yeah.
So, which I always kind of went with.
He would not learn.
If he was Spanish, that's what he'd be called, definitely.
That's right. Well, the funny thing is, Roger Miller had already achieved a lot with Cameroon. They made history when they qualified for the World Cup in Spain in 82. As it was their first time on the world stage. And they returned unbeaten, of course, from that World Cup. But after winning the African Cup of Nations for a second time in 1988, Roger Miller actually announced his retirement from the international stage. And he had a couple of testimonials in Cameroon, which was attended by almost 100,000 spectators. And he moved to Reunion Island, which is in the Indian Ocean, to live out what he thought would be peaceful semi-retirement.
Oh, yeah.
With the Italian 90, the finals were looming, and the national squad was there was a lot of conflict going on there. The Cameroonian press began sort of saying, "Get him out, get him back," you know. And there he is in this island in the Indian Ocean. Yeah. I wouldn't have thought a hotbed of football.
No,
just living out peaceful semi-retirement, as we said.
I'll tell you, he's from there, Laurent Robert. He's from there. Yeah. Okay. He's the only footballer I think that's been from there.
Well,
that I know of.
Well, Miller, you know, got a phone call from the president of Cameroon.
And it's not the 18.
It's like a grizzled detective. Just one more case.
Yeah.
It was pleading for him to
He's
come
like
out
Danny
of retirement.
Glover and Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, exactly. So at the age of 38, Miller, he got on the boat and he came over. And it was easily his finest hour as a footballer.
He scored four goals that tournament.
He lit up Italian 90. He bursts of pace, jinking runs, clever passes. And lest we forget that celebration.
Oh, yeah.
Which, as you say, is one of the finest sights. You know, dancing around that corner flag, wiggling his bottom.
The best one he did was when he robbed Higuita.
Well,
and he was straight over there.
Well, he came on as a late substitute when Cameroon beat Argentina 1-0, and that was in the tournament's opening game. And in the second group fixture, the great thing was he was 38. He'd been playing like semi-pro stuff in this in this country, in this island in the Indian Ocean. So he just simply couldn't do 90 minutes. So he was the ultimate impact substitute. Yeah. He used to always come on, and often it would be sort of nil-nil or whatever, and he'd come on and get the goals. You know,
he's the original Solskjaer.
Oh yeah. My goodness! Yeah. And so anyway, so of course against Romania, he came on. Came off the bench after 58 minutes, 0-0, and he became the oldest goal scorer in the tournament's history when he actually roasts a couple of Romanian defenders to smash it in on about 76 minutes.
Remember that goal? And
10 minutes later, he scored another one. And they beat Romania 2-1, and of course, as I say, they qualified. And then into the second round, they played
Colombia,
who were a good side.
Yeah, they were, yeah.
They're a very good side, Colombia.
They're a precursor of that 94, much, much fancied 94 side.
Well, that's right, yeah. And he scored two goals. And as you say, the first goal, I mean, this is a 38-year-old man. He roasted, like, Escobar, of course, you know.
Tragic Escobar,
He absolutely roasted him and one of the other defenders. And brilliantly put it past Higuita.
Yeah.
And then, as you say, Higuita absolutely...
So Higuita massively tried to take him out with a two-footer as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
He robbed Higuita, ran past him, and he was off. And Higuita, last ditch, just chucked 2 feet right at Miller's back of his leg.
Yeah,
and
he stayed
in his feet, and he slotted it, and he was off. Well, he reeled away.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then was became the oldest swinger in town.
I love that every time he scored, he broke his own record for being the oldest scorer.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Miller said about that, he said... about the Higuita moment, he said, he wanted to dribble it past me. You don't dribble past Miller.
That's class. Zlatan Ibrahimovic would like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Don't dribble past Miller. Third person as well.
Yeah, Jim Campbell was enjoying that.
Yeah. So he took Colombia apart and they won that game 2-1. And we have to say as well, while we're on the subject of Roger Miller, that 4 years later in USA 94...
He played again, didn't he?
He played again. Yeah. Bearing in mind, in 1980, in the late 80s, he thought, I'm pretty much done. He becomes one of the stars of Italia 90, and then he still features in USA 94 and scored in that tournament.
Yeah. At what age?
At the age of 42. Officially the age of 42. It could have been about 46, Pete, to be honest with you.
Isn't that ridiculous? He must be the oldest scorer, surely.
Oh, yeah, he would be, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
little mini profile within a profile there, Mark.
Well, absolutely.
I think he deserves it.
Yeah. Well, he'll get his own round of applause at the end, I'm sure. But back to Cameroon. So here they are, lighting up the world stage and in 1990 with a fantastic kit, fantastic players, fantastic hair, the lot. Yeah. And it all came to a head when England played Cameroon in the quarterfinal of the World Cup. And as I'm saying, which England won 3-2, part of me is thinking, wasn't it a shame they lost?
Yeah, well, Sir Bob said, he said that they were the best team they played against.
Well, they were a real physically sort of dominating side, weren't they? Yeah. That was what gave England problems.
Yeah.
And it was just their discipline let them down a little bit, two penalties.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that kind of, that raw physical side of the African game, you know, people hadn't really experienced that too much.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays we're much more used to it, you know, but certainly. But not only that, the way they passed the ball, they were technically really, really good as well, but just maybe a bit naive tactically. Mm. Cameroon, you know, had burst their way through to the quarterfinals. And I mean, they must have thought, bloody hell, we can go all the way here.
I reckon they could have, which
they could have done. I mean, perhaps against Germany in the semi-final, maybe that would have been a bit too much.
Argentina weren't great; they were fallible. As Cameroon already beaten once, so if they could get to the final, there's no reason Cameroon couldn't.
But I think Germany were the best.
Yeah,
they were probably. Yeah.
So maybe, but it would have been a very interesting game, Cameroon.
All I'm saying is that game against England in the quarterfinal could have gone either way, 3-2, and semi-final, you're in the hat. You know, you never know.
Yeah, true. I think we can all agree that Cameroon were the better side in that quarterfinal.
Just those two penalties. Gascoigne got brought down, Lineker got brought down, didn't they?
That's right, yeah. But I mean, it was a real classic game, that. And, you know, England...
Oh, it was breathtaking.
It was. I can remember, actually, Barry Davis commentated. And I just remember that you know, Gascoigne said after the game, he just went, we underestimated them.
Yeah. Mm.
Totally underestimated them. Yeah. Which is crazy, really. You can see what they're doing in the previous rounds.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
But I can remember when... it was Mfede, I think. Was his striker?
That sounds right, yeah.
He ran through on goal and Shilton sort of blocked, and it was a one-on-one.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, Flipping it.
We've got a game on here.
What is going on
here?
We've
got a game on our hands.
You know, and they had a couple of efforts, and then David Platt scored and put England 1-0 up, and everyone was like, all right, here we go. Early scare. Yeah. Nonsense. Cameroon came back at them,
yeah.
And again, you know, the manager brought on Roger Miller at half-time.
Yeah.
Give him a whole half this
time.
We had more than a whole half. It went to extra time.
Yeah.
And Miller, he just started pulling the strings, and things just started happening. And they got a penalty on 61 minutes. And Miller created that, and then I think Gascoigne fouled one Oman Biek, and Koundé scored the penalty. Now the Naples, the home crowd, was suddenly, whoa, we like these guys, and that, they took Cameroon to their hearts, if you like. And they started coming. And Makanaki, do you remember Makanaki?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Great name, great player.
Cyril.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
not Alan.
No.
You know, he hit the outside of the post, and suddenly England were panicking.
They're under the cosh,
they were really panicking. And then Roger Miller just drifted forward as if the England, you know, midfield and defence weren't there, and just touched a Kike through, who was another substitute, who finished superbly, and it was 2-1 Cameroon. And I can remember Barry Davis, he kept saying, you know, Cameroon deserved to be level, Cameroon deserved their lead. He kept really whacking the point home. And then England kind of, this is where Cameroon, you know, were a little bit naive. England came back, and it was a sloppy penalty they gave away. Lineker converted, and then in extra time again, Cameroon came forward, but again a little breakaway. Gascoigne showing his work.
Slid Lineker through.
Beautifully slot Lineker through, and they went a clumsy foul, and Lineker scored again.
Oh, they're all nailed on penalties in that game.
But Barry Davis, you could imagine what he was saying, you know. And he was saying Cameroon are passing the ball better, they are technically better. And Trevor Brookin, who was co-commentating, said, I think after this game, Bobby Robson will take this video home and he will show a lot of kids this and say, this is how you pass a football.
Yeah.
Bobby Robson said after the game, everybody had a bit of sympathy for Cameroon. I know we did. We got in front with a good goal, a wonderful goal, but at the time they were the better team. And when they went ahead, they were the better team, but we pulled it out of the fire. And David Platt said it was a difficult game. They were strong and athletic, and a little bit tactically naive at times. We weren't surprised by them because they had done very well, but we did expect to win. Again, they expected to win England. They went into that, and what, I mean, this kind of sums it up. England's, some of the scouts in the England camp had said to Bobby Robson before that, he says, oh, you've pretty much got a bye to the semi-final.
Yeah.
Simply ridiculous.
You'd hope that wouldn't happen these days. I mean,
absolutely.
The world's a lot. I mean, the thing is, there is no excuse, because they've seen what they've done in the group stage. That's not a fluke. You've come through the group, a tough group. You've beaten Colombia, who are a good team, in the second round. You've beaten the world champions. There's no excuse for that.
Absolutely, Luke. And Cameroon, they became the first African side to reach the quarterfinals. And because of their efforts, and also Egypt were in that World Cup, and they had a respectable showing. Okay, they went out in the first round, but they did have a respectable showing. They got draws off Ireland and Holland, I believe, and it was only England.
They lost 1-0 to a Mark Wright goal, didn't they?
That's right. Because of the success of the Cameroon side, and obviously we have to mention Egypt as well, FIFA increased Africa's quota of spots from 2 to 3 for USA 94. So that Cameroon side were real sort of pioneers for
African football. Well, they kicked the door down for the rest of the...
They really did. They put African football on the map.
And then Nigeria did really well in 94, didn't they?
They did, yeah. But that Cameroon side, they were so likeable. As I say, they were one of my favourite teams in the history of the game. They played the game in, well, you could say the right spirit, although they did make a few fouls on the way
there. Exactly, yeah.
But they loved the game.
It was nothing vicious.
The celebrations, it was absolutely wonderful. Everybody who watched them, I'm sure, will agree that it was just an absolute joy.
Yeah.
And
they're a worthy addition to the Hall of Fame.
Oh, absolutely they are. Absolutely they are. You know, so I can't talk highly enough of them. And Roger Miller says, you know...
Are we ending on a quote from Roger Miller, are we?
Well, I think so.
Okay, it's only fair.
He said... he was saying about the World Cup, and he said, football is what makes small countries big. It is through the magic of the beautiful game that a single player can catapult his homeland into the global arena. And he certainly did that.
Cameroon, Roger Miller.
1990, come on
do
in.
The dance, do the dance.
And Roger Miller. He's coming in too. We'll talk to you. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the show. I hope you've had a marvellous time.
We have.
I'm still dancing.
Yeah. Are you asking?
If you'd like to get in touch with us, the email address is podcast@thefootballramble.com. And why not check out our website, which we have a thing called RambleTube on there now. Thefootballramble.com is the website. RambleTube is when we have some clips of what we've been talking about, and no doubt there will be a lot of Cameroon stuff over there, so you can check those guys out. And also, the Dean Windass Hall of Fame T-shirts are there, so you can find them. They've got
there's a banner at the,
the top of the website, and get involved. You won't be disappointed. Pete?
Yeah, and we've also got, obviously, our Betway little sort of competition we've run between ourselves, but obviously it's open to everybody else. If you go to betway.com/thefootballramble, you can have a crack at... if you're going to put on a bet, do it with us, I guess. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's kind of the message that, that we're sort of sending. And,
Pete and Jim are winning.
We've all got our little predictions, haven't we? So I went for Real Madrid last week, didn't I?
Yeah, you got that.
And who else won?
I did.
Yeah, Jimbo won because he picked Chelsea. Chelsea. This week I've gone for offers for next week, I suppose. There's not just international.
I did a treble last week. All three of them didn't happen.
This week
I'm bottom of the league.
This week I've got a joint bottom with me.
Oh, good.
On minus -20.
That's a good.
I've gone for away wins for Sevilla and Valencia, and a home win for Barca in a treble. I'm trying to buy my money back.
Marvellous. Well, yeah, get involved. Say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Lukey.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, James or Jim.
Goodbye or bye.
We're all off to dance around a corner flag with Roger Miller. Cheers.
And people who are waiting for the answer to Luke's wicked little riddle.
Don't tell them.
Little question. It was the question was, of course, if you remember back to the start of the podcast, it was which player has scored more than any other player against Liverpool at Anfield? And the answer is Luke Moore.
Jamie Carragher.
Oh, he's an on-goal master.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.